Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
And that's right, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Best Seat in the House podcast. As always, I'm your host, Rob Kramer, joined by my co-host, Daniel Bobo Curlin. And Dan, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing good. Just came back home from the Met game. We were supposed to film a little earlier before the game, but there's some malfunctions with my headphones. Fortunately, sometimes these microphones on those headphones, specifically the wired ones, sometimes always wear out, as you know.
Yeah, exactly. So unfortunately, it crapped out a little bit on us. But hey, you know what? Actually, it kind of gives us an opportunity now to give a little bit more of an up-to-date show here, as we could talk about all the goings-on tonight. And actually, believe it or not, a bunch of things happened after we would have finished recording our show tonight. I mean, obviously the noticeable things are the Yankees and the Mets. The Yankees having another tough game today. The Mets going out there and getting a victory against the White Sox. But also, you had the Jets going out there and making a trade tonight, trading they traded wide receiver Denzel Mims to the Detroit Lions. So there's definitely some things going on tonight. There was a rumor that we're going to get into a little bit later at the end of the show about Joel Embiid possibly going to the Knicks. So definitely a lot of things to get into. But you know what? We're going to kick it off with, like we usually do, even though I was very tempted to open with the Yankees tonight. But we're going to kick it off with the Mets, being that Dan just came back from Citi Field, and being that it was a feel-good victory, man. I mean, the Mets go out there, and they get the win, a 5-1 victory over the White Sox. They improved their record to 45-50, which, you know, by, you know, all reasonable expectations for the Mets is far below what we'd like. It's still better than what they've been. So, five games under. Take the first two from the White Sox. We got a dominant effort from Justin Verlander tonight. 8 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 7 Ks. Obviously a nice dinger from Brett Beatty, too, who's been hot lately. Dan, what was it like being there tonight, watching Justin Verlander dominate and get you out of there early, man? I mean, the way he was going tonight, that game could have been done by 9 o'clock.
Yeah, that was a nice quick outing. I wish we could get more of that from Verlander, because this felt like what we would expect from Verlander. What a nice outing, nice quick outing. Nice little giveaway, too. They gave out these baseball cards. And I'll probably post pictures of them on Twitter, because it was five. I think he got these 5 cards. They were kind of holographic, and he had the National Baseball Card Day little thing. On the logo on the card. It's like, it was the cards of I think Scherzer, Verlander, Lindor, and Alonso.
Wow, very cool. That's a nice little quartet of cards to get there, and great job by the Mets. You know, they've been doing good promotions all year.
Yeah, they are, and these top cards are whole or. Graphic. They're kind of cool looking cards, I have to say.
Very cool. Very cool, man. So, that was definitely nice. And, you know, you mentioned Verlander pitching like the Verlander we expected, which, his numbers are starting to come back, too, as we see on the screen. He's 4-5 this year, which isn't entirely his fault, although he hasn't been great, to be fair. But a 3.47 ERA, you know, that's a far cry from the sub-2 ERA that he had last year in his Cy Young season with Houston. But, I mean, you got to give Verlander credit that he's starting to resemble the guy that we thought we were getting. And it was good to hear him say, you know, there have been a lot of talk from guys like us and guys that talk on the radio and, you know, a whole bunch, and you know, obviously newspaper writers and things along those lines, that the Mets could potentially look to trade Justin Verlander or Max Scherzer. And it was actually good to hear the other day Verlander come out and say that he's committed to being with the Mets, right?
Yeah, that exactly. He's committed to being with the Mets. I just have a feeling this team could – I feel like it could be a surprise at the trading deadline where we're inching closer. If we keep this momentum going, we're going to be right back in it. We got, of course, after tomorrow's game, we got a tough stretch. I mean, we're going to be playing – got three games against Boston. Then we got three – then we got two against the Yankees, which are going to be always an intense series as always, regardless of how the teams are doing. Then you also have I think we're going to be back home. I forget what happened after that series, but we got some tough opponents up lined up.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. I mean, when you look at what the Mets have coming up, I mean, you know, you just mentioned, obviously, going to Boston is never easy. And playing the Yankees is never easy, despite, as we're about to talk about, how bad the Yankees have looked, you know, over their last recent stretch of games. And, you know, you still have to respect the fact that they're the Yankees. But actually, I just checked it out, and after that Yankee series, the schedule does lighten up a little bit, because then their next seven games are 4 against Washington and 3 against Kansas City. But after that stretch, they have 3 against Baltimore, and we all know how good the Orioles have been this year. So, you know, it's really going to be a big thing for the Mets, if they want to stay in this, to beat the Royals and beat the Nationals, right?
Yep, exactly. It's going to be a very interesting stretch. I mean, we're not out of this yet. Just a nice little hawk streak, like the movie Major League. The winning streak has been done before, and it can be done again.
Yeah, right now, if we were watching the movie Major League, it would be when they zoom in on the groundkeepers after the win, and they say they still suck, because most people still wouldn't be believing in them yet, but let's just hope that it also ends like the movie Major League with them winning the pennant.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that was such a good win. Nice to be there. Nice little promotion. As I said, I'll post some pictures on Twitter a little later on before I go to sleep after we film this, because I kind of like the way the cards looked.
Very cool, man. Yeah, definitely post that, and we'll retweet that on our Twitter account and everything, and everybody can check that out. And you know, we were just talking about the Mets, you know, hoping to claw back their way into contention and possibly winning a pennant if they're able to pull that off. And one guy that we're gonna have to focus on before we move on from the Mets that has just been on a tear in the month of July is Francisco Alvarez. As you can see on the screen, 381, 7 home runs and 14 RBIs in the month of July. I mean, this guy has just been on a tear. He looks so dangerous at the plate. 19 home runs, you know, tied for the rookie major league lead. And he also missed the first month of the season, let's not forget, when he was down in the minor league. So, I mean, Dan, what are your thoughts on Francisco Alvarez and his assault on major league pitching in this month so far?
Well, he's finally getting the playing up. If Alvarez the playing, showing why he needs he's showing the player he can be. And I also have to say about Buck, whenever he's not catching, for the time being, he needs to be DHing on those days that he's not behind the plate.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, man. I mean, you know, you need his bat in there. He is, you know, the Mets are a decent hitting team when they're going well. But, you know, like Francisco Lindor, I guess you could call a power hitter, but I really see him more as like a doubles and gap hitter. You know, although he definitely has power, there's no doubt about that. But, you know, obviously Alonso is a slugger, and that's the type of guy that the Mets need to protect. Alonso is another big, you know, as Fran Haley used to say, a big bopper that you put in that lineup and protect him because, you know, God knows we see Pete Alonso can carry this team. He has in the past, but he's not the same player since Charlie Morton hurt him with the hit by pitch in the hand in early June. He was an MVP. Pete Alonso was the MVP in my estimation. Aside, you know, he was the National League MVP because obviously Shohei Ohtani is the American League MVP. Pete Alonso was the National League MVP until he got hit on the hand, and that really derailed his season. He hasn't been the same guy since. So I hope that Pete is able to straighten things out. But, you know, right now the guy that could protect him when he comes back around and the guy that's providing the pop while Pete's, you know, not been producing as much has been this guy, Francisco Alvarez. And he really is a sight for sore eyes for this team right now. Right, Dan?
Exactly. Definitely. He's living up to that. And I'm just looking forward to more of this from Francisco Alvarez. And this guy, I saw him rise up in the ranks in the minor leagues. I saw him during the Cyclones days. And this guy just looked like he was going to be the player we expected in the big leagues.
Damn right, man. So tip of the cap to Francisco Alvarez as he continues to play great baseball. And, yeah, he's a homegrown Met, just like you said. So let's keep it moving along, though, Dan, as we got a lot to get into tonight. We'll get right into the Yankees now, man. I mean, the Yankees are, you know, the Mets are fascinating because of the way that, you know, they're a $300-plus million payroll that has vastly underperformed this season, and they're five games under 500. We know that. We go over that every week. But the Yankees, man, I mean, it's almost like we're seeing this destruction happen in front of us right now as the Yankees lose again to Anaheim, who's not a good team, as we've discussed. You know, Mike Trout is hurt. Obviously, they have Shohei Ohtani. But, I mean, you know, this is not a good team overall. They don't pitch well. They don't play good defense. They only have Shohei Ohtani. And the Yankees have gone out and played three games there, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and have lost all three. They're 50-47. They've lost four straight. They've lost 8 out of 10. Dan, I mean, you have been saying all season long that you weren't really buying this Yankee team too much. What are your thoughts right now? I mean, look, baseball is, you know, a game of streaks. You're never really as good as you are when you're hot, or you're never really as bad as you are when you're cold. What's your, you know, views on this Yankee team right now?
Oh, my God. They just look – I've never seen – it's been a long time since I've seen the Yankees look this vulnerable. I mean, I've seen years where the Yankees not made the playoffs, but this just doesn't look like a far cry from, like, the Yankees of the 90s. Like, I mean, I know some Yankee fans are probably shocked. Probably some Yankee fans that are probably don't even remember what last place is even like, the finished last place. So I personally do not even think that this would be even near this bad if George Steinbrenner was still alive. Like, the George Steinbrenner must be rolling in his grave with how bad they're doing.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think, yeah, if Steinbrenner was still alive, you know, Verlander would have been a Yankee years ago, like, and I mean before he was even a National. No, I'm sorry, I said Verlander, I meant Scherzer. Scherzer would have been a Yankee years ago. Hell, Verlander probably would have been a Yankee too at some point. And you know, I definitely think that you know, the Yankees would probably be much better off, to be honest, if he was still alive. And you know, Hal unfortunately is just not running the team with that same drive, that same gusto. He actually came out recently and said that he's not going to panic, and he's not going to make any panic moves. You know, similar to what Steve Cohen said. But you know, you could almost understand Steve Cohen taking that, as it's still so early on. But I mean, Hal has been seeing this underperformance from the Yankees for years and years. I mean, now it's even worse than it's been, because at least the Yankees would still make the playoffs and be competitive, and you know, have really good regular seasons. But now this underperformance has stretched into the regular season, and that's the last thing the Yankees need. I mean, you know, George, we talked about him. He was big for bringing in the big-time free agents. But, I mean, let's take a look at Carlos Rodon, who got smacked around tonight in Anaheim, 0-3, 7.36 ERA. He went 4 1/3 innings, 6 runs tonight, looked awful. And then as he's walking off the mound, I don't know if you saw this, Dan. Oh, actually, you probably didn't, because you were at the Met game. As he's walking off the mound, some Yankee fans were giving him shit behind the dugout. And he looked up at them and started sarcastically blowing them kisses. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. This is a guy the Yankees went out and gave a boatload of money to, $160 million, and he misses the first half of the season. Then he comes out and he's 0-3 with an ERA near 8. And you're going to do that and insult the Yankee fans like that? Give me a break with this guy. He needs to apologize for that.
Yeah, he does. Like, what the? I got to look at this video. I'm probably going to watch the clip of it after the show just to see what, just to get a reference to this. Because that is, like, whoa, that is something you would never expect to see happen with the Yankees. I mean, I just have to say it. It's just shocking. And I could only imagine what the ghost of George Steinbrenner must be like if that whole thing. I've heard Yankee fans always say this thing that there's, the Yankee Stadium is occupied by ghosts of dead Yankees. I wonder if that's the case with if George Steinbrenner haunts his old office at Yankee Stadium.
I'm sure he does, to be honest. I'm sure he does. But
actually, I got to say a little thing about Steinbrenner. 2008, the All-Star game at Yankee Stadium, right? I was there in the upper deck. And they did a very, really nice ceremony before the game where they got almost every living Hall of Famer together to be there to be part of the pregame ceremonies, right? During that ceremonies, I guess it was kind of clear that George Steinbrenner didn't have that much time left. They bring him out onto the field. It was weird seeing George Steinbrenner look frail on a wheelchair.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, he really was that strong, imposing, you know, boss for the Yankees for so long. And to see him in that condition definitely had to be shocking, no doubt about it.
Yeah, that was, like, shocking. Like you see him there on a wheelchair, but he's like waving, but it's like weird seeing Steinbrenner in that. It was weird seeing him in that shape.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, he's in a wheelchair waving. That's like, you know, something you'd expect the Queen of England or something to be doing, you know, not George Steinbrenner. You know, one of the titans of New York sports since the early 70s. So, yeah, I definitely understand it, man. And
it was a very nicely done ceremony they did. Like, the way they were just, more importantly, because it was like a rare time that they had an All-Star game at a really old stadium. Of course, this was the last year of that stadium. But just a really old stadium. And the way they brought together these, just about every living Hall of Famer that was alive that they could get took part in that ceremony. That was just a really nice thing they did.
Celebrate. Oh, yeah, that... I remember that one, and that was a great All-Star game. And that ceremony was fantastic.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the ticket stub had like a little infield dirt embedded onto the ticket.
Wow, very cool. Very cool, man.
I got a little nice little souvenir in addition to the ticket.
Exactly. That's very Yankee-like. That makes a lot of sense, if you ask me. And, so as we continue along here, so obviously the Yankees struggling. But, yeah, Dan, what do you think of this whole thing with Rodon blowing the kisses? Because that's an insult to the fans that paid hard money to go there and watch the Yankees, who have played crappy all year from one of their new stars, who hasn't done a damn thing in pinstripes yet. And this guy's going to come out and disrespect the fans like that? I mean, that's it seems like a Mets-level controversy. You know, it almost reminds me of Javier Baez giving the thumbs down a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's like, I get that shot. That is, like, really shocking. Like, I never expected we'd see that with the Yankees of all teams, him doing this. I mean, that's almost as insane as, remember when Alex Rodriguez was trying to pick up girls during a playoff loss?
Yes, I remember that.
It's that level of stupidity we're looking.
It's true, man. You're definitely right about that. So the Yankees have that controversy to worry about. And then, you know, on top of that, before we move on from the Yankees, I mean, the one thing that you have to keep talking about is obviously Aaron Judge has been down for well over a month at this point, close to 40 games worth. And the Yankees are, well, actually, I'm sorry, over 40 games worth now. He's down for 42. Oh, no, 37. I suck at math. He's been out for 37 games, and the Yankees are 15-22 in that time. Dan, you know, what do you think about this? I mean, are the Yankees really that dependent on Aaron Judge? I mean, you know, your record says what you are, according to the great Bill Parcells. And, you know, you are what your record says you are. And right now the Yankees are 7 games under 500 for – you know, well over a month. It's not a good situation in the Bronx right now.
Yeah, it's like, I feel it's 50-50 if they would still have Judge or not. But it does play a factor, I feel like. But we really could not tell based on just one player alone. But It's looking bad. And this, like I said, there might be some Yankee fans that might be a bit shocked to find themselves a higher draft pick.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, right now the Yankees currently sit in last place in the American League East. Shocking. Definitely shocking. No doubt about that. We'll keep moving along here as we, we're going to be doing a, maybe slightly shorter show as we, normally do this week, as, we also have this weekend, we're going to be doing our, football preview show. We're going to talk a little football here in the second half of the show now. But we're really going to be pumped for that football preview show that we're recording on Saturday morning, right, Dan?
Yep, and there is some wild football news that's putting me in a little shitty mood. See why it looks like possibly the Giants are going to be without a running back because Saquon Barkley is threatening to sit out the season.
Yeah, you're right, man. I mean, it's definitely reminiscent of holdouts we've seen in the past, as last Friday, the deadline for the Giants and Saquon to come to terms on a long-term contract agreement passed, and now it's official that no matter what, Saquon has to play, if he's going to play this season, on the franchise tag, which is for about $10.1 or so million. And so the Giants have every right to tag him, and Saquon now, according to the NFL, you know, collective bargaining agreement, Saquon can hold out for as long as he'd like, including the whole season. And, I mean, we just heard Saquon's agent come out and say the other day that opening day is possibly in jeopardy. That's something no Giant fan wants to hear, because I don't care what anybody wants to say. Saquon Barkley was the best player on the Giants last year, right, Dan?
Yeah, that it's scaring me now. Freaking seeing this, like we don't need this week offense going into week one, and it's a tough opponent too. Like, if we can, I don't want to go to week one, me yelling at the TV, yelling out "fuck the Cowboys," you know, me being upset. I don't need this yelling. I'm already going through it enough during baseball season. Why do I need to have to go through this in football season as well?
Yeah, man, you're right. I mean, this guy is very, very important to the Giants season. And I do think that logic will prevail here, because let's be honest, the Giants need Saquon. He's their best player. So I could even see the Giants kind of baiting Saquon back and giving him their word, or like a written agreement, that they won't franchise tag him next year. So now he would know that this is a legitimate contract year, because as we all know, the Giants do have the right to franchise Saquon next year, but they could give him some peace of mind to know that this is a legit contract year for him. He's going to be a UFA after the season, completely unrestricted. And that might be appetizing to Saquon, because, I mean, let's be honest, the Giants aren't the only team that have decided that they cannot or don't want to pay a running back type dollar, you know, top money. We see what's going on with Pollard over in Dallas. He's in the same situation as Barkley. We see what's going on, you know, with Dalvin Cook, who people still talk about as potential target for, really, I see the three AFC East teams, Patriots, Dolphins, and Jets, as the three biggest possibilities for Dalvin Cook. But let's not forget, Dalvin Cook had 1,100 yards from scrimmage last year. He's 27 or 28 years old. He's still potentially in his prime. And the Minnesota Vikings felt that they needed to cut him just to save themselves on the cap. And that's only because people view the running back role as expandable these days. So that's the one thing that Saquon has going against him. Any other position, I think Saquon gets paid, right, Dan?
Yeah, exactly. Running back might not be the one. Fortunately, he must have an agent that must be the football version of the dreaded Scott Boras.
Yeah, I remember in football, that used to be Drew Rosenhaus. But you don't really hear about Drew Rosenhaus too much anymore. I wonder whatever happened to him. Scott Boras is still hanging around, though.
Yeah, he's still hanging around baseball. But I don't know who the guy is in football that's got to be a really annoyance to fans that are of teams. And hopefully not Saquon's agent.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. And, you know, hopefully Saquon and the Giants, I do think that, you know, like I said, I think logic will prevail, because Saquon needs to have a good season no matter what this year to guarantee, you know, that a team, even if it's not the Giants, has interest in him next year. So Saquon cannot go the Le'Veon Bell route and hold out all year, right? I mean, I think we all saw that was a bad move by him.
Yeah, exactly. And also, speaking of Scott Boras, a little word of advice to Scott Boras. Stay away from Pete Alonso, Scott Boras.
Yeah, I definitely like that. yeah, you know, so we'll keep it moving on here, because now the Giants open training camp next week, but the first team to open up training camp in the NFL today was the New York Jets, as they reported today their first day for training camp. A lot of stuff going on with the Jets right now, as you know, we saw, let's see right now, I've got a couple of pictures to show here, Dan, as we have this guy right here. There we go. That's one pitcher from training camp today that we got. We also got, obviously Mr. Rogers coming in there. We got a little Quinnen Williams coming up on here in one sec. As the man that just got his 4-year, $96 million contract is walking into training camp today. There we go. And I had to show this one too, though, because I don't know if you caught this, Dan, but this was one of the images coming out of the reporting day, as they're calling it right now. Let's see. Hold on. Let's pull this one up. This is Jets' second-year defensive lineman, Michael Clemens, who showed up to camp today. For some reason, it reminded me of the Yoenis Cespedes days with the Mets, you know, showing up on all those crazy things he had. But Michael Clemens decided to show up today with a baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire, shirtless. And this is a very big man.
Does he think he's vegan or something? That seems very Negan-ish from Walking Dead. Hold on, you there? Your mic cut off.
There we go. Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, everybody was making the Negan comparison. You're right. You're right. That was pretty great. I was cracking up at that one. But also, one last thing that I really just can't help but show, because I can't really believe that this is even still a thing. But yeah, there we go. Aaron Rodgers in a Jet uniform. So if you're a Jet fan, soak that in for a couple of seconds, and we'll let that go up there. But yeah, man, I mean, what'd you think when you saw the Quinnen Williams contract extension that came down a few days ago for the Jets? 4 years, $96 million. I mean, it's right in line with a bunch of the deals that got done earlier this year. And it's not quite Aaron Donald money, but I don't think anybody else aside from Aaron Donald really deserves Aaron Donald money. So I think that Quinnen got paid, and I'm happy for him, right?
Yeah, got paid, happy for him. Just got a good deal out of this one, but only will tell. I've said this many times, but being the fact you're a Jets fan, I think pretty much your girlfriend probably already before the season even starts has you on suicide watch.
Yeah, much like the Larry David character. Yeah, I think you're correct about that, my friend, because the Jets will do that to you, and that's why anybody who's going out there and expecting everything to go nice and swimmingly for the Jets this year, I'm not saying that they're not going to win, because hey, I'm a Jet fan. I keep my fingers crossed and I hope for the best, and I think they have a great chance of winning this year. But if you think it's going to be easy, let's put it this way. If the Jets are going to win the Super Bowl this year or any year in the next couple of years, it's going to be in the fashion that the New York Rangers won the Stanley Cup in 1994, where you're going to be tearing your hair out of your head along the way, and they're going to break your heart in games that you think they should win, and they're still, it's going to be one of those games. Every single thing is going to come down to the wire, so it's, the Rangers made their fans sweat it out in 94. And even if the Jets win this year, come on, Jet fans, it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Well, I got to tell you, I'll probably, if that happened, I would have to check your pulse. Because even though I'm not a Jets fan, if my Giants weren't in the Super Bowl, but your Jets were in the Super Bowl, I would probably still want to be in the same room you're watching the game just to try to make sure you're okay after they won a Super Bowl, because who knows what kind of shock you would be. I feel like that anytime I see one of my teams win the championship. I mean, I think we both feel like that if the Mets win a World Series. Someone would have to check both our pulses. But I'm telling you, if the Jets were full, I would have to, I would be checking for your pulse to make sure you're okay, because, and I might have to have a defibrillator on hand in case you have a shock, in case you have one of those shock and shocked heart attacks or something.
Yeah, I mean, and you would have every right to think that and to have that, because I would be losing my mind. I wouldn't even know what to do. You know, the last time a team that I rooted for won a championship was the 94 Rangers when I was 7 years old. So it's been a really, really long time. And I don't know how I would do if any of my teams won the championship. I, you know, including the Rangers, who I've seen win already before. And, you know, the Mets, who I were, let's see, I was 12 days old the last time the Mets won a championship. So it's yeah. You know.
What was it, during game 6 of the NLCS? You were literally being born, and your mother was listening to probably Bob Murphy's voice was blaring out of the speakers of the delivery room as you were being.
That's right. That's right. October 15th, 1986, the 16-inning clinching game of the 1986 NLCS. So I was destined to be a Met fan.
Here is you would have been born like the right the very moment you heard Bob Murphy say, like, swing and a miss, swing and a miss. You know, that call we've heard a bunch of times.
Yeah, struck him out, struck him out. Yeah, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, man. So, oh my God. But yeah, as we continue to move along here, you know, I did want to touch on the fact that the Jets did trade, I mentioned it earlier, but the Jets also traded wide receiver Denzel Mims, a former second-round pick that just didn't pan out. They traded him to the Lions for a conditional sixth-round pick. You know, hey, but best of luck to Mims. It just didn't work out here. You know, it's funny hearing some Jet fans talk about him online and everything, because you'd think that this guy was the second coming of Jerry Rice, and he has still never even scored a touchdown. So as much as, you know, I hope the best for Denzel Mims, I'm also not shedding a tear that the Jets traded him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, the NFL draft is a crapshoot that when I see these, I think it's gotten to the point now when I see these high draft picks, sometimes I kind of, you're kind of excited that you got what you got, but you really can't get too excited until you've seen it on the field.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right, man. So, you know, best of luck to Mims in Detroit. He's you know, at least the Jets did him a favor and sent him to a team with a pretty good quarterback, because, you know, as we saw last year, Jared Goff's a pretty decent quarterback. So, very happy for him there. Hopefully things work out for the best.
Exactly. Hopefully our good friend Dave Landau, Mr. Detroit, has something to celebrate about.
Exactly. Hopefully Dave gets to see Denzel Mims' first career touchdown catch at some point this season. And luckily, the Jets aren't playing the Lions, so, you know, I don't got to worry about seeing it scored against me. So, but, and so, Dan, you know, I think we're coming just about to the end here. You know, as like I said a little earlier, we're going to take it a little short because we're a bonus episode, and the fact that we're filming it, you know, a little bit later than normal, too. So we're doing the bonus episode this weekend with our special guest, Jake Asman. So don't forget to tune in to our football training camp preview, which is going to be a lot of fun. That'll be probably released on Saturday afternoon as we're recording it that morning. And also, before we get out of here, I want to get into this, a trade in the NBA that people have been talking about. Joel Embiid, as we know, has been not happy in Philadelphia. He said recently, too, that I forget exactly how he phrased it, but that he just wants to win, even if that means not in Philadelphia. So I found that to be very interesting. Now, a lot of people, when I first heard that, I thought to myself, you know, look, Joel Embiid's a guy that averaged 33 points a game last year. He's a hell of a player. He's a guy that won the MVP. He's the reigning NBA MVP. But the question is, I didn't think that the Sixers would have any interest in trading him to the Knicks. Now, I don't know if they do, but I heard I was reading a report by the New York Post and you know, a bunch of other sources that are indicating that the Knicks and Sixers potentially could do this trade. You know, the Knicks have 11 first-round draft picks between now and 2030. So they have a lot of draft pick compensation that they can trade. And that capital, you know, is very interesting to a team like Philadelphia that just hasn't been able to hit that next level. I mean, they've never gone beyond the semis. So Embiid wants to win. He's sick of seeing the same thing. And, you know, I would definitely be very interested in picking up Joel Embiid. What do you think about that, Dan?
Yeah, I would be too. This looks like we would finally be able to get that superstar that gets us over that hump. And I could not be more happier as a Knicks fan than I would be at seeing this happen. And if it does happen, let's hope it lives up to that expectation, because it's very high. This is we're part of a fan base that hasn't won a championship. I don't know. I guess before we were born. Even.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the last time the Knicks won, you know, was 1973. So it's been quite a long time since the Knicks have won. And you know, I agree with you. This could be the missing piece, the missing superstar, which I believe that Joel. I believe that Jalen Brunson is a budding superstar right now in the league. I think that Julius Randle is a step below a superstar. He's a very good player, but I don't think he's quite a superstar. Joel Embiid is the guy that I agree with you, that he could take these guys and this team to the next level and give the Knicks their big three. And who knows what the package would look like. I mean, I would assume if you're making a package like that, you're probably not giving up Randle, but maybe you would include a guy like Mitchell Robinson or RJ Barrett. Obviously, it would include a bunch of first-round picks. but, you know, depending what that lineup looks like, if you give me Brunson, Embiid, Randle, and, you know, maybe if you still have RJ Barrett, I really like that, man. You know, not to mention you throw in Josh Hart. That's a pretty good rotation to start off with, right?
Yeah, that is good. That would lead to one heck of a season. And it's always a good thing with the Garden Rocket. I mean, it's just been so long since playoff basketball has been relevant in New York. Like it's something like I've sometimes tuned in on and off when the Knicks aren't in it, but it just doesn't feel like enthusiastically about watching the playoffs when the Knicks aren't in it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. There's you know, it's hard, especially when you grew up in the 80s and the 90s like us, where you got accustomed to seeing the Knicks in the playoffs every year. And then over the last 20 years, we haven't seen them in the playoffs. So, I mean, we've also gotten accustomed to that, which isn't a good thing. And, you know, it kind of makes you not pay attention to the NBA playoffs quite as much because your team isn't in it. So it's a little, you know, it's a bad thing for multiple reasons. But, yeah.
And I also have to say one thing. If the Knicks start up a nice little dynasty of championship contenders, I think we need to bring back something that was also great from that time period. A little classic video game NBA Jam. They need to make a new version of NBA Jam. That is still one of the most fun multiplayer and then sports video games of all time.
Oh, I totally agree. I totally agree with that. And actually, you know, you just triggered something in my memory talking about the throwbacks with NBA Jams. Before we get out of here, Dan, I wanted to get your opinion because the Giants did this last year where they brought back their 80s look, which I loved that they incorporated that again. You know, not an every week thing, but I think they did a good job of incorporating it. Yeah. The Jets, yeah.
Yeah, I got to say, I love how the Giants incorporated those 80s things. That was the first version of the Giants uniform I knew growing up. I mean, when my dad died when I was very little, one of the last Christmas gifts he had given me was my very first Giants jersey. It was a Lawrence Taylor jersey. That was like that logo that had been with the Giants and the helmets. That was the first version of the Giants uniform I knew growing up. So I thought that was the thing they brought that back for some.
Yeah, I always liked those jerseys too, man. So I definitely understand. I mean, obviously you have that attachment to it, the personal attachment as well. I always liked it too. I thought the football jerseys in the 80s looked great for my Jets too. I was always a fan of that combination that the Jets had during that New York Sack Exchange era. And actually, one of the cool things that, you know, this is how crazy Jet fans are, is that there's a video, and I actually got the video, but for some reason I tried bringing it in here, and it must not be in the correct format because I can't play it on here. But apparently, there was a video that was going around online today where it was a kid who was at the first day of Jets training camp, and he was just filming things that were going on around him. And one of the things that he happened to pick up was a tent off to the side where the Jets were having players model the uniform and take pictures. You know, I guess for like the websites and promotional photos and stuff like that. And one of the things he caught was CJ Uzomah, the Jets tight end, modeling what appeared to be, I mean, it wasn't exactly 100% clear, but it appeared to be one of the green and white, primarily white jerseys from the old 80s Jets era, which so kind of indicates to a lot of fans that the Jets are going to be having some of those 80s throwback this year too. So I was pretty excited about that because, like I was saying, I also love the fact the Giants did it last year.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So you got something you're probably gonna find yourself going, well, I don't know, I'm just a little bit too used to saying Modell's, because back in the day it was like when that store was around, you'd be going to Modell's to buy that jersey. But you're probably gonna be rushing to the Jets website to buy one of those jerseys if they announce it.
I would love that. You're definitely right about that, man. And, you know, one other thing, too, before we get out of here, because we're just about out of time. Did you see, too, that the Giants announced, I heard the Jets are going to follow suit, too. But, and I've thought they should do this for years, but the Giants actually announced on Twitter and probably social media overall a couple of weeks ago that they are no longer during home games going to paint the NFL shield at midfield. They're going to go back to painting the New York Giants logo at midfield during the, you know, for home games for the Giants at MetLife Stadium. I've heard, and it hasn't been officially announced, that, like I said, the Jets are going to follow suit. But I love this, man. They should have done this years ago.
Yeah, exactly. They should have done this in the 1970s. I mean, before I was born, because I think I saw this. I was excited. I think you probably saw me tweeting a picture of my enthusiasm about this, because apparently back from my research, they never had their logo in midfield going way back to when the Giants the previous Giants stadium opened. They never had that logo.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, apparently they just always had like an NFL shield, or they just had this thing that said the Meadowlands or something like that, some kind of Meadowlands logo or something like that.
Yeah.
This is the first time that I think they've ever had, since they've had their own specifically football-only venue, their logo in midfield. I'm excited. It looks great. And I hopefully things will work out that we'll get to see it in person. I mean, I'm hoping that we can pull off getting to be at that game, the Giants versus Jets later this season.
Absolutely, man. That would be awesome if we could pull that off. And yeah, but I agree with you, man. That I like the fact that the Giants are doing that, and it's about time.
Yeah,
but. Exactly. But yeah, man, so I guess that's going to just about do it for us today. Dan, before we get out of here, do you have anything you'd like to plug for yourself?
Sure, my Twitter account, Bobo103NYC, Instagram Bobo718DK. Also, there's only so little details I have about this thing that I was a part of, but you probably saw some pictures that I was an extra in an independent film. I don't know the whole details of the plot, I forgot the name of the title of this film, but I'm just a little background actor in this independent film. As you saw in the pictures, I'm sort of just a bartender in the background. But it's still kind of neat seeing that filmmaking process in front of me.
And yeah, that was awesome seeing you in those pictures, man. That was great. Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, that was fun. It was kind of weird to see me as a bartender, but it was pretty neat. I've jokingly said that maybe I should probably use that same, because I still have the outfit I wore as an extra. It was something I just kept. I might utilize it. Maybe one of these days we gotta film. Maybe one of these days we gotta film a little sketch of Donovan's, because some of my connections there might be okay with me filming a sketch there one day.
We have to do that.
Yeah, because I loved that East Side, that sketch. Remember that award-winning sketch of the East Side Dave show that you were a part of?
Yes, that me, you, and Stevie Lou did.
Yeah, that. By the way, that's a sketch contest. That is a contest-winning sketch in the East Side Dave show. That is a winning sketch, and I just had the urge to do another sketch, because I was rewatching that sketch, and it just brought back. I was just dying laughing at it and remembering, just trying not to laugh when we're filming Stevie Lou's scene in it. You know, when he's pretending to be a pizza man, because he just had this great comedic timing to just. He played that pizza man kind of sounding like kind of awkwardly the way he talked, and I was just laughing when I'm coming up with the script for the line to how I respond to him being late. especially the part. Well, of course it was pretend, but filming him when he's whacked with the pizza box.
Of course. Oh my God, that was good stuff, man. As a matter of fact, actually, we'll include a link to that in this episode, because that was a lot of fun to do. So we'll definitely put that video in the description so you can check that out. Our award-winning sketch with myself, Bobo, and the great Stevie Lou on the East Side Dave show on Compound Media from back in the day. So very cool, man. That was a lot of fun. And one last thing before we get out of here. If you want to check us out on Twitter, you can check us out at @BSith_podcast, like it says at the bottom of the screen. You can check me out at my last name, KramerNY. And don't forget the Instagram, too, at Best Seat in the House Podcast. Don't forget to check us out and subscribe and like our videos on YouTube as well. Best Seat in the House Podcast and same name on Rumble. Please like and subscribe there, because I'm assuming from the numbers out there that most of our listeners don't check out Rumble. But no big deal. It's there. It's like the break glass in case of emergency for Best Seat in the House. It's just there as a backup in case anything ever happens to our main channel. So once again, we want to thank everybody for all your support and checking us out since we've been doing the show over these last now 72 episodes. It's crazy, Dan, right? We're getting up there, man. We're getting up there. So.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, so all right, now we're gonna get out of here. So for Rob Kramer and Daniel Bobo Kernlin, this is the Best Seat in the House Podcast. I will catch you next week, everybody.